The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
It's the 8 o'clock hour, and we welcome you on this Valentine's Day, Wednesday, Feb 14. Hope all is well with you. Hope it's a day filled with love in many, many ways. My love is for today's topics and lineup, at least radio-wise speaking, of course. Valentine's, it's weird. Are you grabbing the wife and going to dinner tonight? Are you hanging loose till Friday or Saturday? You know, because Ethan's 14, he's got math homework, so we're gonna have a very special day today, and I'm going to offer her a little item or two that Ethan and I have conspired to get her a little something sweet as well, literally and figuratively, and so we'll be taking care of that business after school today and having a pleasant Valentine's Day evening at home, and then we're going out on Friday night. Whatever, if you've spread this all out into Valentine's week, quite literally spread the love across the calendar and across the landscape of people whom you love. Okay, I love today's lineup because it's our next guest and then a parade of people amid our usual parade of topics. Virtually everybody that's running in the crowded Congressional District 6 race to succeed the retiring Joe Barton. We have Jake Elzey, Kevin Harrison, and Big Troy. Yes, Big Troy. You'll meet him at 9:35. As just tons of people running for tons of things make their way onto the show. But as sort of an entrance ramp to that, in a week filled with news about the White House and palace intrigue of various types, just what the heck is going on, I'm intrigued with people who have had an eye and an ear to this for some time. Joshua Green is a senior national correspondent for Bloomberg and has written a bunch of books and a bunch of articles for a bunch of publications. Some time ago, he came out with a book called Devil's Bargain: Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. Now, in this fast-paced, fast-moving time, if your book comes out in paperback, especially with this kind of subject matter, there might be a revision or two, an extra chapter or two. So with an overview on all of this, it is a pleasure to say hi to Joshua Green. Welcome, sir. How you doing?
Great to be with you.
So when did the original Bannon book come out that you wrote?
Well, so the original Bannon book came out in July and was essentially the inside story of the Trump-Bannon partnership, you know, how they came together, how they won the greatest upset in U.S. presidential history. The new paperback has a lot of new reporting and a preface on how it was that their relationship fell apart once they got to the White House.
Gotcha. So the advance material says when Steve Bannon left the White House in August 2017, the first reporter he called was Joshua Green. Why is that?
Well, you know, the book, when it came out last July, obviously got a lot of attention, New York Times bestseller, and was, I think, the first book to come along to give people the inside glimpse of what really happened. You know, this is stuff you see on cable TV. This is stuff you read in newspapers. This book takes you inside the room in the campaign. And so I think Bannon thought that, look, if I call Josh Green and I talk to him and he writes about this, well, you know, everybody's going to read what he has to say. And the new stuff in Devil's Bargain that I add is that what Bannon and Trump were saying publicly at that time, that this was a very amicable parting, that Bannon was going out to fight Trump's battles on the outside, was very different from what actually happened. What actually happened was Bannon was furious. He refused to take Trump's phone calls for a while. He told people around him, I'm sick of being a wet nurse for a 71-year-old man, and really turned on Trump in a way that didn't become clear until much later.
Wasn't it like so much of what we hear in the passions of today's politics? Isn't this almost all personal and stylistic and a chemistry story rather than any real difference over issues?
Absolutely. And what it really was a fight over credit and a fight over who is the true hero of the 2016 election. In Bannon's mind, that election victory, Trump's win, was a referendum on a set of nationalist political ideas that were more Bannon's than anybody else's. In Trump's mind, the election was a referendum on Trump. And one of the reasons, if you look at the history of these two guys in the White House, one of the reasons they fell out almost immediately, you remember back in February, the Time magazine cover called Bannon the Great Manipulator.
Right.
Saturday Night Live, you know, portrayed him as a kind of grim reaper puppet master and made Trump sit at the little kid's desk. You know, and then my book came out, which essentially gives Bannon a lot of credit. I mean, I don't think Trump would have been elected without Bannon, but I certainly don't think that you know, Bannon got all the credit. Well, that enraged Trump, and then when Michael Wolff's book came out last month, that was the final straw. The relationship blew up. You know, Trump released this brutal statement calling him Sloppy Steve, and essentially just destroying his career. And so the new preface of my book takes you inside Bannon's house as this is happening and after this is happening, you know, to kind of see him there at the very end, you know, after everything has kind of crumbled to pieces.
Some of the most front of mind recent history on Bannon and Trump takes us right back into something we'd all just as soon forget, the Alabama Senate race. So Donald Trump wanted a Republican in Alabama. I wanted a Republican in Alabama. I hated that it was Roy Moore, but you know, that's what you got, and that's the devil's, speaking of devil's bargains,
it's the one we kind of made.
It's a good book title. So when Bannon is down there, just front line out there campaigning for, did Trump tolerate that, actively like it or actively dislike it?
Oh, actively liked it. And here's what was going on. This is the other story I tell in the new preface. When Bannon left the White House, supposedly he was going out there doing battle for Trump. But what he was really trying to do was to take this nationalist political movement beyond Donald Trump. So he was out there trying to recruit a slate of Senate candidates, including Roy Moore, who would give him, Bannon, a kind of institutional power base in Congress so that if Trump decided not to run in 2020 or was impeached, Bannon could take up that mantle and run for president. And so one of the things we know Trump likes to do is to win. And he's a popular guy in Alabama, and Bannon convinced him Roy Moore is the ticket here. You get even though you didn't support him in the primary, you get behind his candidacy with me, and together we're going to push this guy to victory, and a lot of the credit will go to you, President Trump. And so you remember Trump flew down to Pensacola, Florida, right next to Alabama. Mm-hmm. He campaigned for Moore, and then both of them, frankly, wound up getting a little humiliated when Roy Moore lost that election. That was the beginning of the falling out between the two of them. And then, you know, what really pushed him over the edge were the comments Bannon made to Wolf about how, you know, the campaign had been treasonous and meeting with Russians and so on and so forth.
All right. Not to wallow in somebody else's book, because we got yours, and it's Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency by Joshua Green. But can we spend 5 seconds on this piece of crap that Michael Wolff, listen, you can like or not like Trump, I don't care for the purposes of conversation with you, but what was going on there? I mean, the only thing that is remotely creditable in an otherwise hate-filled screed are the conversations that Wolff apparently did indeed have with Bannon, and timing is everything, because they caught him at the height of disgruntled employee mode.
You know, I couldn't agree more. Everybody comes to me as somebody who's written a book about Trump and Bannon and says, does that book ring true to you? And I don't know anything about Wolf is reporting on so much. I'm not vouching for his book, but I will say that every quote from Bannon in there sounded true to me, because he said a lot of the same things to me.
I
think, frankly, what it was indiscretion on Bannon's part. It was fed by ego. It was fed by his belief that, look, you know, I'm the real guy behind the Trump movement. I don't think a lot of people would agree with that. I think that's what drove it. And what you see in my book, in the new version, is the consequences of that kind of narcissism, the price that Steve Bannon has paid for doing these things.
So does he even have a future? I feel like most of America is forgetting that Steve Bannon was ever born right now. Is this one of the most effective political suicides of recent memory?
You know, I don't know if it's a suicide or a hit job, because I have never seen anybody blow up an opponent as badly as Donald Trump blew up Steve Bannon, right? Not only did he put out that statement, but he got Bannon's big financial benefactor, the Mercer family, to cut ties with him. He got him fired from his job. But here's the thing. I don't think that Steve Bannon is gone for good. If you look at what's happening since he left, you know, Trump has really gotten close to the Republican establishment, to Mitch McConnell. He passed tax reform. But look at the White House today. It's in chaos. You know, it seems likely that there could be a Democratic wave in November. And if that happens, and if Republicans lose control of Congress, Trump is rightfully going to be angry. And at that point, I could see him reaching out to somebody like Steve Bannon.
Okay, all right. And in a way, because my overall take on Bannon is there's some genius there, but some weird dysfunction that makes him a kind of a wheels-off prospect that, you really got to keep an eye on. But the other possibility is if Trump's favor starts to sink, if there's a problem in the 2018 midterms, and Bannon thinks that he can foment discord and aggrandize his own brand by coming along with a slate of candidates with a banner that says, Trump is abandoning us. He's fallen in with the establishment. If you still believe in draining the swamp, only I can do that, and being more of a troublemaker than ever before. Does that sound plausible at all?
You know, it's possible, but I think it's unlikely. I mean, having, you know, I was in the new book, I was basically embedded with Bannon from the time he got pushed out of the White House, you know, all the way through the Golden Globes speech with Oprah, which is another new scene in the book. And, you know, I think he understands that his ticket to political relevance is Donald Trump. You know, after Trump blew him up, Bannon put out a fairly meek statement of his own saying, you know, he still didn't mean to insult Don Jr., still supports Donald Trump. I don't think that Bannon has the wherewithal or the money or the platform to launch any kind of an independent presidential bid or even run an independent ticket of candidates. And without Trump's seal of approval, I think that he just doesn't have the kind of power that he did when he was in the White House or even after he left. Bannon's power stems from the fact that he was thought to be Trump's agent. He was thought to be Trump's connection to the base. And what we see now is that since Bannon has been blown up, Trump's connection with the base is just fine. I mean, his approval rating is 90%
exactly
among Republicans.
Right. Exactly right. Why don't people get that? I mean, I was a Ted Cruz guy. I was a fairly mainline, conservative, traditional conservative type person. And after the ruin of the Obama years, I wanted the surgeon's scalpel of Ted Cruz to come along. And it turns out what we really needed was not a scalpel, but a sledgehammer. And I have loved the Trump presidency. 90% of it, I have loved it. It's the most conservative presidency since Reagan, maybe since Coolidge. Why don't people get that? And do you have any take on the bizarre windowless van that is the Never Trump cult?
Well, you know, it's funny. I pose and answer exactly that question in the new preface. And here is my answer. I think that there was a valid question after Trump was elected about whether this was a referendum on a set of ideas and it was the policies that Americans had supported, or whether it was the person, the man in Donald Trump. They wanted somebody who would come in and just kind of smash a corrupt establishment and drain the swamp. Now, with the perspective of hindsight, I think it's pretty clear that people were voting for Trump. They like him. They want him. And look, he delivered a big tax cut, right? So even if you're a more moderate, traditional type of Republican, you know, maybe uncomfortable by some of Trump's rough edges, now what you've seen is that he can deliver. So I think that's one reason why people were reluctant to recognize that it was Trump who was to credit for all this stuff. I think as we move forward and we see numbers like the Gallup poll number from a couple weeks ago that showed 90% of Republicans supporting Trump, I think it's going to get harder and harder to ignore the fact that it's Trump and nothing else that's popular among Republicans.
Right.
And as far as the Never Trump guys go, you know, I think that is a vestige of the belief that, you know, maybe it's not Trump, maybe it's these ideas, but these guys are dropping like flies. I mean, you know, Bob Corker has announced his retirement. Maybe he's going to unretire, only with permission from Trump. Jeff Flake is on his way out. You know, these Never Trumpers are moving from politics into media. I don't think that they're going to be much of a factor, at least not in Republican politics going forward.
All right, the book is Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency, Joshua Green. Last couple of minutes. You've done a lot of writing and a lot of stuff, and everybody should go out and see it. Here's what I want to see if you still have it lying around. Tell me if this story is true. About 10 years ago, did you write a piece about Hillary for GQ? And it committed the sin of not elevating her to sainthood, and it got squashed because the editors said, we'll never be able to talk to Bill Clinton again if we print your story?
Wow, you got a good memory. Yeah, no, my big subject back in 2008 was the Clinton presidency, and I wrote a piece inside her campaign describing the chaos and the discord, and Clinton staffers went to GQ. They had Bill Clinton lined up to be GQ's man of the year, and they threatened GQ, say, if you don't kill Green's piece, we're yanking Bill Clinton from the cover. You're not supposed to do this, but, you know, GQ killed the piece. I would argue on my own behalf that in hindsight, my warnings were correct.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Hillary was going to be the president.
Yes, the biggest
Barack
I told
Obama
you so.
Helpfully illustrated that point
right.
for me.
Oh,
but,
my gosh.
You've got a great memory.
Well, I do remember that. And the bottom line is, I mean, we could all grumble about that, and you first and foremost, but it is their magazine. They can do whatever they want, right?
Well, hey, they can do whatever they want, right? But the point is to tell the truth about people, even if they were popular and powerful as Hillary Clinton was at the time. Maybe not so much anymore, but back then, you know, she was somebody you weren't supposed to criticize, and I made the cardinal sin of not saying nice things about her.
And you silly, silly man, this notion that it's their job to, quote, tell the truth about people. In what alternate universe is that true? Well, I'll tell you what, in this universe, there is Joshua Green, and there is his book, Devil's Bargain, out now in paperback with new addenda. Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. Joshua Green, pleasure to meet you, sir. Thank you very much, and best of success.
Great being with you. Thanks again.
Take care. 822, Mark Davis, 660 AM. The Answer. Working our way through the Valentine's Day playlist, 1964. One of those masterpieces from Holland, Dozier, and Holland, the Supremes. Little Baby Love. 866-660-5759. We are in Farmers Branch. Ray, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Hey. Here's the part where you start talking.
Well, I was bitten off. Sorry about that.
No, no problem.
Cut the radio down.
He knows what.
Basically, I was a never Trumper. I voted for Gary Johnson.
No, my.
But I have to be honest.
Wow.
I have to be honest.
Yes.
Trump delivered.
Yeah.
And he delivered. And not only that, he's done a lot of things that if Mitt Romney would have done it, people would have paraded.
Yes.
You know, when it came to the immigration, his immigration is compassionate. He's being very flexible against a lot of conservatives that want him to be hardline. His infrastructure package, you know, these are things that he's really negotiating, which he's a negotiator. That's what he does. You know, he's delivering exactly, you know, like if any other Republican that was moderate would have delivered, it'd be a parade.
Exactly. It's kind of funny. You talk about the parade. I would phrase it somewhat differently. If Mitt Romney had done these things as president, I'd have fainted dead away.
Exactly.
There was nothing in Mitt Romney that made me see ahead of time this kind of bold conservatism. I always saw it as at least a possibility from Trump.
Right. And also, too, he did something because, you know, a lot of people don't realize in the infrastructure bill, there's money to wipe away the debt for historically black colleges. Like, he's not going to get credit for that. It's something that I read about a couple of days ago, the colleges that were affected by Hurricane Katrina. That picked up debt. So he's done a lot of things to help pretty much all the groups of people that are saying they would never support.
Indeed. And if they paid attention, they would. And if we're about real issues, many of them would, you know, from black unemployment to the women who love him, who work for him in his organization. The notion of him as a misogynist is crazy. Ray, thank you. There's it says something good about you. Your skepticism of Trump was fine. Your preference for another candidate was fine. But you had certain values, certain things you wanted to get done. And what makes you smarter and sharper than a whole lot of other people who should be as smart and sharp as you are, is they take a look at results and they go, dang, look what the guy's done. This is stuff that I've wanted for years. And unfortunately, the halls of Congress and the various annals of punditry have a ton of people who see this right in front of their face and hate his guts anyway. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it. 8:30, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. And here is Gordon Griffin in the newsroom.
That every long, long stream led me to where you are. Others who broke my heart, they were like northern stars.
Working our way through the Valentine's Day playlist.
On my way into your loving
arms. Little Rascal Flatts and Bless the Broken Road.
Is true. that God bless the broken road that led me straight to you.
Alrighty, that tune leads us straight to our next candidate interview. Tis the season for candidate interviews, and there is no environment that runs as full of them as the crowded primary to fill the Joe Barton vacancy. This is one of those where the primary pretty well is the general election. I do not see a Democrat winning this seat. That makes the March 6th primary just huge. We've spoken to many and we'll speak to many more. And it is a pleasure to say hi to candidate in CD6, Jake Elzey. Jake, welcome. Nice to meet you, sir. How you doing?
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me on this morning.
It is my absolute pleasure. As we head to the website, Elzey, E-L-L-Z-E-Y, LZforCongress.com, big quote from you. I'm not a politician. I'm a fighter pilot on a new mission. Tell me about the fighter pilot part.
Well, sir, I served for 20 years in the United States Navy, first as a helicopter pilot and then a fighter pilot in combat, flying F-14, Tomcats, F-18 Super Hornets, and Hornets. So I spent a long time in the service of our country and alongside many great men and women who write the blank check to serve our country as well.
And now the imagery that you send is that this is a new mission, but there are a lot of ways to frame yourself, and it is as the non-politician, but it's an obviously political job. So how do you reconcile that, and what do you want to bring if you win this thing?
Well, first of all, you see everything as a mission, and my mission is simple and clearly defined. The service is a calling and a duty for me, and I've been under oath continuously since July 6, 1988, to protect and defend the Constitution, first at the Naval Academy, then in the Navy for 20 years as a pilot, and now as a commissioner on the Texas Veterans Commission. So I aim to serve my family, my God, and the people of the Six without reproach, according to the Constitution, and honor our veterans, wrote a blank check for our nation, and my fallen brothers and sisters who gave the ultimate sacrifice for the country we love. So this is a mission, and I think that Congress would function better with many more veterans in it, because we have to secure our borders, rebuild our military after 16 years of constant war, provide better care for our veterans, reduce our national debt, and ensure limited government for our economy to grow. And that's a lot of stuff. That's a big elephant to bite one to eat one bite at a time.
It is. So let's take it sort of bite by bite through a few actual issues. Jake Elzey with us, candidate in Congressional District 6 to fill the Joe Barton vacancy. Let's talk immigration. If you were there now, the mic gets handed around to you. What kind of deal do you want to cut to solve this DACA problem, or do any of these deals seem attractive to you?
Well, the DACA is the word of the month, isn't it? It's, the priority is border security for the 30 million Americans, and that's our first priority. As a congressman, I'm there to enforce the laws and not be the president of a charity. Now, having said that, border security is in the Constitution. We need to deal with that very first. Nothing else comes first other than border security. Secure the border, end chain migration, and the diversity lottery first. And then we can deal with DACA. Now, we all agree that DACA was a cynical, unconstitutional attempt at making law by President Obama. He admitted he couldn't do it. He did it in 2012, and he tried to expand it. He put lives at risk with this order, and now we have to clean up this mess. Secondly, DACA never provided a path for citizenship. Never. Not in its original intent at all. It provided permanent residency, which is different than citizenship. Having said that, as a military man, I have served with many immigrants who are not yet U.S. citizens who have served in the military as a path to citizenship. So if you want to talk about folks who are willing and able to serve their country for 5 years honorably in the United States military, then I would enjoin or I would support a path to citizenship for those people and those people only.
Gotcha. So are the choices join the military and we can talk about citizenship in 5 years, or even if you came in through no fault of your own, you and you can take mom and dad with you or whatever, got to go back. This notion of citizenship, even after like 10 years of crime-free living that's in the DACA deal that the president put forward and others, that's not a sale for you.
Well, as I said, come out of the shadows, register, and I would entertain permanent residency,
right,
but not citizenship.
Gotcha. So someone could be here and work for if they're 25, 30, they could be here and work as long as they don't commit crimes for the rest of their lives. But if it's citizenship they seek, that's going to be what, leave and come back in and go at it the normal way?
That's a difference for me, yes, sir. Yeah. And, you know, nobody likes somebody cutting in line. And the definition of permanent residency is a green card that has to be renewed every 10 years. So we can look at that later. It is President Trump, who is a deal maker, deals with this all the time, and you know, he moves the playing pieces around. I'm a military man. My yes means yes, and my no means no. So citizenship, if you serve in the military for 5 years, everybody else can apply for permanent residency.
I figure
out no amnesty.
Gotcha.
No amnesty.
Indeed so. I figure I'll probably ask this to everybody because it's kind of an interesting touchstone. How overall is the Trump presidency working out for you?
It is remarkable how much he's accomplished in 1 year. I think he drives a lot of folks into a tizzy with some of the things he says, but he's a master deal maker, and he's keeping his promises. You know, he's kept his promise to establish our U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. That's been talked about for decades, and it's only just now been accomplished. We have a booming economy thanks to the tax cuts that he partnered with Congress on, and I like the direction we're going. I'm very proud of what he's done, and I'm hopeful for the future, and that's why I'm running.
And it's a crowded primary, so name of the game is set yourself apart. So is there anything that I haven't seen fit to ask about that you say, hey, this is something that either only I bring or something I want you to pay special attention to as everybody heads to the poll? Early voting is less than a week away, so what do you want to tell folks?
Well, my resume is broad and expansive, and I've served our country for 20 years. This is all about service for me. This isn't a career. Service is a calling, not a career. 20 years in the military, 5.5 years as a commissioner on the Texas Veterans Commission. I fly for an airline, and I'm also a small businessman, and I have 2 young children. The future belongs to them, and as their protector and their father, it is my duty to hand off a country that is stronger and more prosperous to them when they're adults, and that's why I'm running.
Jake Elzey, website is Elzey, E-L-L-Z-E-Y, ElzeyForCongress.com. Pleasure, sir. Thank you. Appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you, Mark.
You bet. God bless. All righty. We're working our way through. Coming up, let's see, Kevin Harrison coming up, and Big Troy at 935. 866-660-5759. To the phones. We got a lot of, okay, so Olympic stuff, the greatness of the Shaun White win, and then things went south in a hurry. I still love the win. I still love him. I still love his story. Then instantly, of course, the moment someone reaches a pinnacle, along comes a story of a settlement a couple of years ago for a sexual misconduct of some sort charge. That and listen, does that mean you did it, or does that mean you just wanted it to go away? I don't know. I don't presume guilt. If you got like 8 or 9 of them, if you've been writing checks like every few months, that's one thing. So this hit Shaun White. The Me Too movement hit Shaun White, and then something else did. And this one I do know about, and that is that you got to be more careful with the flag. He held the flag high. And reveled in it and celebrated it. And the picture I put on Twitter was a freeze frame from my own TV box. And it was glorious. I said, Shaun White brings it. 3rd gold medal, age of 31. Incredible. USA, USA. And then as he headed off into the crowd, he kind of drags the flag behind him, you know, like it's a tarp off a boat. Problem. So, Shaun, love you. Thanks for your success. Proud of you. Little more care with, of course, this is probably not advice he'll need again. I do not see him returning in 4 years in where are the Winter Games? Oh, good grief. I hope you all are enjoying the Asian Olympics. Pyeongchang right now, all right, South Korea. The next Summer Games are in 2020. That's Tokyo. And you know where the 2022 Winter Games are? Beijing. We're going back to Beijing. Have the Winter and Summer Games ever been held in the same place? I don't think so. So anyway, so Asia gets the Olympics like for the foreseeable future. And by the way, that guarantees you a pretty rockin' opening ceremony if history is our guide. Anyway, though, I do not necessarily see Shaun White coming back at 35. But if he does and wins more gold, a little more careful with the flag there, my brother. All right, 866-660-5759. We have a number of things that are in the news, a number of things that are happening. Let's grab some calls as we head to our next break and the rest of our show. 866-660-5759. Hey, thanks, Mr. Internet. We're in Indiana. Hey, Tony, welcome. How are you?
I am doing great, Mark. How about yourself?
That's fantastic. Thanks.
You do have a lot of topics this morning, and
now
I want to go back to one that you touched on earlier. Yeah, the caller talking about, wanting to have crimes for those who would attack police officers and so forth, and
right.
I do support that. And I think you can make a clear differentiation between that and a hate crimes. And here's the reason why. In a hate crimes, within its own definition, you're dealing with people's prejudices and biases and their thoughts. Mm-hmm. We have to be free to think however we want to think, and that includes our prejudices and our biases.
Right.
If somebody wants to hate me because I'm a white, Christian, heterosexual, conservative male, that's their right. Now, if they attack me because of it, if they create severe bodily harm, use weapons to do so, it's covered under the aggravated assault crime because the circumstances of the crime dictate a greater punishment. If somebody is attacked from pure hatred because they're black or they're white or because they're a homosexual, in the aggravated assault definition, it talks about having an indifference to human life. Meaning this, if someone is attacked because they're a homosexual, even I as a heterosexual am harmed too. All of mankind is harmed. It's not just a specific group.
But are we okay? So fair point. I resonate with that up to a point. This was what we were talking about an hour ago, and I appreciate you bringing it back up. The flip side of this coin is, it doesn't mean that we say it's okay to kill somebody for his wallet. But where's the indifference to human life if you kill somebody when you're carjacking them? I mean, is that like better on the scale of bad things than killing somebody for being Hispanic or Jewish? I mean, if you kill somebody, you kill somebody. That's where the way I've always felt, that murder is murder. I mean, are there aggravating circumstances? Yes. But go ahead. Your thoughts on that.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, the aggravated circumstances. If you kill somebody in a carjacking, I mean, that is an aggravated circumstance. You killed somebody in the commission of another crime. It's the same thing if you hold up a convenience store and the clerk gets shot in the process. It doesn't matter anything about the personal part of that clerk, meaning whether they were white or black or whatever. It's the fact that a person, a human being,
right,
was killed in the commission of a crime.
Right.
You can set up an aggravated circumstance where a person knowingly shoots at and kills a police officer without regard to anything more about that person. It is the fact that they are an officer of the law that they can be protected by a law. And
yeah,
this
gets very interesting because, right, there is something. If you just kill somebody on the street, you don't even know who they are, that is terrible. If you kill somebody because of what they are, race, sex, sexual proclivity, that's terrible. There's something different, and I don't mean that anybody's life is worth more, but there's something. It's an attack on our system. It is an attack on our entire society to take murderous aim at those who enforce our laws.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, if a person is willing to shoot at a person in uniform, how much more likely are they to shoot at somebody not in uniform?
Well, then that brings an even weirder question. There may be folks who have no gripe whatsoever with anybody. You know, just they would never kill somebody for a watch, and they would never kill somebody for being any particular race or any particular religion. But in this era of cop hating, that may be their particularly unique murderous passion. Good call all around, Tony. Thank you very, very much. 850, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
While I'm far away from you, my baby, whisper a little prayer for me, my baby. Because it's hard for me, my baby.
And the darkest hour is just before dawn.
Dedicated to the one I love, Mamas and the Papas, a little Valentine's Day playlist in the Bumper Music Library. Speaking of people I have grown to love very, very recently, the Dallas Morning News allowed me to take a little break from the politics of the moment and do my column for them about my Haiti voyage with Food for the Poor. So if you want to see that, you can go to dallasnews.com/opinion. Just search for Dallas News, Mark Davis, Haiti. Or I put it up on Twitter last night, and it contains some of the photographs of the Haiti voyage, and it is all linked to our Food for the Poor campaign. And the reason I went to Guatemala last year and the reason I went to Haiti just a couple week before last was to inform what I bring to you. For a couple of years before I actually made these trips, I knew Food for the Poor was great. I knew they fed kids. I knew they brought water projects. I knew they built homes for people living in hovels, living in sheds that we wouldn't use to store lawn equipment. I knew this intellectually, and I would share the message as best I could. But now that I've been, now that I've held those children, prayed over those families, it is a whole other thing to me. And I hope that exudes from every part of the message. So here is the message. Do we have charities, things that need help in America? Of course, do those things. I always love the pushback. Hey, Mark, how come you're talking about Haiti when, you know, we got to cure cancer, or we got veterans, or we got, you know, poor people? Well, duh, no kidding. Help all those things. It is not a zero-sum game. You know, help your local boys club. You know, donate to cystic fibrosis. You know, help a veterans organization. And if there's anything left over, and if you try, there will be, give us $50 to feed a kid for a year who does not have a government program down the road that's going to come help him. All right? The poor in America have microwaves. All right? And don't get me started on that. I don't want to play Can You Top This with human suffering. But the poor in America drive their own cars. All right? So when you go to a Haiti and see people living in a level of poverty that you've just never seen before, it puts a little spring in your step to come back here and say, hey, if you've got $50, you know, and you can get that to us in ways I'm about to describe, you can feed a child for a year. Food is hope for these folks. You can feed a child for a year and it's help build water projects that give them water for life. $50, food for a year, water for life. Here's how you do it. I appreciate it so very much. 855-916-HOPE, 855-916-HOPE, or go to 660amtheanswer.com and click that Give Life banner. Now, if you got $50, that's great. That's you fed a kid for a year. If you got you know, $500, you fed 10 kids. If you got $2,500, you're sitting here in the studio with me. But you heard right. We've established again the $2,500 level of giving. Now, that's some special amount of coin. We appreciate that. We appreciate it so much that if you do that at 855-916-HOPE and keep a hold of your confirmation code, or if you do it at 660amtheanswer.com, click Give Life, $2,500. Here's what we're going to do for you. First of all, you will have fed 50 kids, so good on you right there. But then we're going to bring you in here to sit you down and chat with me and do the 9 o'clock hour. We're going to co-host it. We're going to have a blast. Or being on the radio is not your thing. You just want to go grab chow somewhere at lunchtime. Anywhere you want, and it's on me. Anywhere. How about the Maxime's in Paris? And I don't mean Texas. No. Anywhere in the DFW area. We will do lunch on me, and we'll have a grand old time. So either one of those at $2,500, it is, man, the door is open. Here's what you do. If you do that at 660amtheanswer.com and click Give Life, or 855-916-HOPE, 855-916-HOPE, just email Rhonda at markdavisshow@gmail.com, markdavisshow@gmail.com. And say, hey, Rhonda, I just did the $2,500 thing. When do we eat? Or when can I be on? We'll set it up. All right. But if you ain't got no $2,500, you just got $50, we'll take it and be so happy. If you got $10, we'll take it and be so happy. So let's feed some kids, okay? Let's do it. 855-916-HOPE or 660amtheanswer.com. Click the Give Life banner. Thank you.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.